Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest and You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, it's our summer series, Going Local. Each Thursday, we focus on one region of our state, and this hour, we explore New Hampshire's most famous region, the White Mountains. Visitors come from around the country, and even the world, to tackle its peaks or just gaze up at the scenery. But what's it like to live in this region, to get up every day and go to work, go to school, be involved in community, raise a family? That's what we're asking today in The Exchange as our Going Local series continues. And let's hear from you. If you live in the White Mountains, what do you love about it? And what don't you love? What do outsiders not get about your part of New Hampshire? Email us your thoughts and your pictures, too. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We have three guests in studio. Jessie Wright is here. She's the local food systems advocate for the Upper Saco Valley Land Trust. She's a member of Governor Sununu's Millennial Council and the chair of Stay MWV, that's the Mount Washington Valley's Young Professionals Group. And Jessie, it's really nice to meet you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Mike Dickerman. He's a writer, publisher, former reporter for the Littleton Courier. Mike's been writing about the White Mountains for more than 30 years. He's co-author of the hiking guide, The 4,000 Footers of the White Mountains. And Mike, it's really good to have you. Thank you also.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Also with us, Jack Cuddy, executive director of the Mount Washington Valley Economic Council. He also serves on the board of the MWV Housing Coalition and other organizations. And Jack, thank you also for making time.
Thanks a lot, Laura.
Well, so Jack, we've got maps on our website, but just quickly remind us what communities this region includes and what doesn't it include? For example, Berlin is not part of this region.
No, we are basically, I represent the Mount Washington Valley, and the Mount Washington Valley has about 10 towns, including Brownfield and Fryeburg, which are our border towns in Maine. And that pretty much signifies what we are. We go down as Carroll County is basically in the White Mountains, and my organization goes down as far as Ossipee.
Oh, wow, which some people would call the Lakes region.
Correct. And then we go up as far as Hart's location.
Oh, my goodness.
So
okay.
We cover that ground. Wolfboro is in the Lakes region. Yeah.
How would you answer that question, Mike?
Well, me being from the other side of the state, on the western side of the state, based in Littleton, I guess we probably consider the White Mountains from, well, you know, there's always that debate of where's the North Country begin or end,
right,
where the White Mountains begin or end. Some people like to think that even Lincoln's part of the North Country. I'm sure the North Country people would debate that from the notches. But I say basically from Plymouth up through Littleton, Franconia, Sugar Hill, Bethlehem, kind of cuts off there around the Whitefield area, also Jefferson.
Okay.
Jefferson's one of those border towns where it could go either way, basically.
Well, we've got maps on the website, too. But it's been interesting for me to hear how the state defines these regions very clearly, and then people who live in them are kind of like, well, we sort of include Gorham or not or whatever. So
yeah.
So what would you say, Jessie, to someone from elsewhere about what it's like to live in the White Mountains region?
I think that when I think about where we live in particular, everything is so much about our natural resources. Every day we wake up and are looking at Mount Washington as we're driving to work, and no matter what season is, it's absolutely spectacular. We get to play in the Saco on the way home from work, and that's immediately what I think about when someone asks me where I live. It's our natural resources and the beauty that we get to be surrounded in every day.
Well, and research is telling us that millennials like you would prefer to live in a city. You know, you want the amenities, you want walkability, you want really good cell phone and internet access and so forth. So how do you answer that question, Jessie? Jeepers, you're a millennial. What are you doing way up there?
Mm-hmm. I think we have a really, really special cohort of young people who are living up by us. They're making sacrifices in many different ways for the lifestyle that they want. They're working perhaps several jobs to kind of piece things together and make it work up by us. And the benefit of that is that right out your door you have different hikes, bikes, and outdoor amenities to really fulfill your life.
What do people, Mike, from elsewhere in New Hampshire not get about the White Mountains region?
That's a good question.
What sort of misconceptions are you always kind of going, no, not really?
Yeah, well, of course, everybody does feel that we're so lucky because we are. We are right there in the mountains. We get all the rivers and everything.
Right, you know, as Jesse said, it's beautiful.
But, you know, living in the North Country and making a living in the North Country is not an easy thing. The wages are lower than it would be in the southern tier of the state. I think certainly for younger people, as Jesse mentioned, you know, you have to work two or three jobs to make ends meet. So those mountains are out there. They're inviting all the time, but we don't necessarily have time to explore the way we'd like to.
Because
I know that's my case.
Because certainly. You're working a bunch of jobs to live there.
Exactly.
So there they are, play on the Saco if you have time between your third job.
Right. I wouldn't live anywhere else. I love the mountains and stuff. But it teases you at times because you want to be out there climbing Mount Garfield or, you know, swimming in the Saco, whatever. But, you know, I have bills to pay, too, the heating bills in the winter and everything else.
Do you want to jump in on that, Jack?
I would just was listening and saying, yeah, you're probably hitting all the key points that people discuss all the time. It's, you know, the area is a very, very awesome place to live. The people that are there really want to be there. And, you know, the millennials, let me just say that I wouldn't separate the millennials to any other population, demographic population, in the fact that no matter who you are or where you live, there's going to be people who want to be in an area where they have the resources and the activities that happen in the North Country or in the White Mountains. And I think either it's millennials or it's mid-range age groups or older people, there's a certain niche of individuals that want to be there. So I think that is part of it, which is kind of contradictory to all millennials wanting to live in the town or city or something and have, you know, that opportunity. But the population, the people, the giving, the support that the businesses provide, all of the nonprofits. We probably have more nonprofit organizations in the Mount Washington Valley than probably the rest of the state.
Is that a good thing?
It's a great thing because each of those organizations provide a specific help to the population, whether it be health, whether it be domestic violence, anything that you want to name. There's someone taking care of it.
Well, and a little bit later, we'll talk about some of those issues that those nonprofits are working on for sure. It's our Going Local series today in The Exchange. Each Thursday, we're sitting down and getting to know a different region of the state a little bit better. So this Thursday, it's the White Mountains region. Whether you live in this region or you just enjoy going there, we want to hear from you. What's great about it? What could be improved? 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR or email exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Jesse, to you first, but I want to hear from everybody. What's your own history with the region? How long you've lived there? And if you weren't born there, what brought you there?
Sure, yeah. I grew up in the area. I grew up in the Mount Washington Valley in Conway. And graduated eventually from Freiburg Academy just over the border in Maine and left for college like many of my colleagues, went down to Babson College in Wellesley, Massachusetts, eventually traveled and ended up back in the region in a master's program at Vermont Law School. I had left and moved to Europe for a couple years and eventually, as they say, you figure out that home is kind of the best place you could ever be. It's that, like, the mountains are calling kind of thing, which I find so cliche, but at some point it's so true. For me, it's a really, really special place, and I feel super lucky to have the opportunity to have gone away and got an education, and then even more lucky to have the opportunity to come back and work professionally in my field. It's not so often that we have the opportunity for young people to really come back and make use of their education. And with my work with the Upper Saco Valley Land Trust, I really get to do that. And it's not super common, so I'm grateful.
Yeah. So you're a classic story in a way. You grew up in the area, took some time to live in a couple different places, but came back.
Yeah. And like I said, in some ways I'm a classic story, but in some ways I'm an anomaly because I got to come back and work in my field.
Right.
And that is not super common.
Mike, how about you? What's your history with this region?
Well, I grew up just across the river in Vermont, actually in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont, which is not a whole lot different than New Hampshire's North Country. I was basically lured here by the mountains, totally. I started hiking when I was in college, started exploring some of the peaks in the White Mountains in 1982, my first hike. And eventually, within a couple of years, I was working at the Mount Washington Hotel, and that's one thing we joke about in our area. Basically, if you've lived in the Littleton area or Littleton, Franconia, Bethlehem area for more than 10 years, you've probably worked at the hotel at some point. It's like a rite of passage living in the White Mountains. But that's what got me into it. I had been writing newspapers since I was high school, 17 years old. I started doing newspaper reporting. Eventually worked my way into a full-time job at the Littleton Courier newspaper. And I kind of got bored with that after about 10 years. And meanwhile, I was hiking stuff. And I wrote a couple books. And that got me going into the publishing field. So now I make my living publishing, writing, and selling books about the White Mountains.
All right.
So it's great. Again, same thing in my field, and it's the area that I love.
Jack, how about you? Your own history with the region.
Yeah. I have. I was born and brought up in Manchester. I'm like fifth-generation New Hampshire citizen, I guess. I had family up in North Conway area, and it's really funny, in probably 1983, in that time frame, coming up and visiting all the time, I got to the point where that scenic vista that where you see Mount Washington when you first come in, after when you go through Conway and you're on that hill and you can look out and see the vista, it always made me feel like this is home.
Mm.
And soon after that, moved up here permanently. So I've been up here for about 34 years, 35 years. I can't tell you how I would not ever want to move back to any of the places other than where we live in.
It's interesting, and we heard the same theme from our North Country show that we did 2 weeks ago. Again, I want to remind our listeners that if you live in the White Mountains, join our Going Local series today. What do you love about living in this region? What don't you love? How would you describe the biggest challenges that this region faces? You can join us with a phone call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. So we'll get into more detail, but just real quickly, maybe to you first, Mike, what would you say the top two challenges are for the White Mountains region? And then we'll get into detail on it.
Well, of course, a big topic this summer challenge is finding a room for all the hikers that are coming to the White Mountains. It's been, as you mentioned, before the show, we're talking about the parking issues in Franconia Notch. There was just a story the other day in the Conway Daily Sun, I believe, Tom Eastman. His first question in the first sentence in the story is Mount Washington being loved to death?
Yeah.
So it's definitely an issue. There's been an explosion of hikers over the last 5 years.
Which is good. You're a guy who writes hiking
good.
Books.
It's good. I mean,
so
the state marketing department's doing great, getting people into the mountains, but where are you going to put them all?
Okay, tourism density is a problem.
Yeah, especially on the trails. I mean, it used to be it was a weekend pursuit basically for most people. Now it's like every day. And Franconia Notch, which has been so much in the papers lately. I mean, I drive through the Notch basically every Saturday going to Lincoln, and I've counted as many as 450 cars parked on the interstate highway, people waiting to go hiking up the Mount Lafayette or up to Lonesome Lake. So it's a huge issue. Mount Washington's having some issues, growth issues as well. There's about 350,000 people visit the summit of Mount Washington every year, which is up about 50,000 over the estimates from just a few years ago.
Again, state tourism officials are applauding. People who you work with, Jack, you know, who run businesses and restaurants and hotels are applauding. But so that's one challenge that we should talk about, sort of the balance between are we loving this region to death? What are some of the other maybe top two challenges you would mention, Jesse, for this region, the White Mountains?
I think the perspective that I can bring to this is the challenges that face a young person trying to make ends meet up in the North Country. We kind of have a different way of looking at it when you're talking about, like we said, working two or three jobs and trying to balance your work-life balance. It's definitely a challenge to figure out that how to make a living aspect of living up there. And I would echo Mike's sentiments about the balance of tourism and the health of our natural resource-based economy. We have been very, very successful, especially in the North Kame area, developing businesses and attractions that bring people in. And how do we balance that kind of development versus, say, conservation of our natural resources? I think that those would be two of the big challenges I would say coming from me.
How about you, Jack? Top two challenges for
the White Mountains region. Top two challenges?
Yeah.
Housing, workforce.
Housing, yeah, sure. Workforce, we hear that from everyone.
Yep. It's a statewide issue, and the two of them go together in the White Mountains. It's particularly in our area, which I'm much more familiar with than where Nick is coming from.
Same in Littleton too.
But those are the two big issues, and which complicates it even more for the housing, is that with the advent of Airbnbs and vacation rentals and so on and so forth, what's happening in the Mount Washington Valley is that rental properties, long-term rental properties, are being used now for Airbnbs, which eliminates the opportunity for the young people or working force to be able to find a reasonable place to live and pay rent. It's not available. And the inventory of that availability is minimal.
Yeah, and we'll probably hear that from other tourism-rich regions of the state. There's so many second homes and now Airbnbs and other rental opportunities mm-hmm. that sometimes those are not available for locals to live in. We got an email from a listener who also wanted to talk about some of the challenges she sees in the White Mountains region. Tracy sent us an email. She says it lacks medical specialty, especially for children and youth with special health care needs. Families travel to Boston and Maine to access care. The largest medical center in New Hampshire needs to address the health care needs of all New Hampshire families. Local clinics and outreach is greatly needed. Tracy, thank you for that comment. And after a short break, we'll talk more about some of the challenges that you guys see in the region. Of course, the many benefits and some of the solutions that people are working on to meet these challenges, like the ones that you mentioned, like the one that Tracy mentioned. So, Tracy, thank you for the email. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's our summer series, Going Local, today on The Exchange. And this hour, we're looking at the White Mountains region of New Hampshire, as each Thursday, we get to know a different region of the state. So, White Mountains region's residents, it's your turn. What do you want non-residents to know about your region? What are some of the misconceptions that you run into? What's your region's biggest problem? What do you love about living there? Again, you can join us. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Again, exchange@nhpr.org. Call in 1-800-892-6477. Jesse Wright is with us, local food systems advocate for the Upper Saco Valley Land Trust. She's also a member of Governor Sununu's Millennial Council. Mike Dickerman is here, writer, publisher, former reporter in Littleton. He's been writing about the White Mountains for a long time. He's co-author of the hiking guide, The 4,000 Footers of the White Mountains. And Jack Cuddy is with us, executive director of the Mount Washington Valley Economic Council. He also serves on the boards of many community organizations. And Jack, real quick, I'd love your thoughts to the email that I read just before the break from Tracy, who said that specialty health care is hard to get in the White Mountains region.
And I would agree with that. And there's reasons for that. I think specialties, doctors that have special abilities and treatment don't necessarily find themselves in rural areas because of the lack of population that's being served. If you look at the area, Carroll County as a whole, probably there's about 40,000 people compared to a million and something down in the southern part of the state in Manchester, for example. So for hospitals and the expense and all the other things and the attraction to be able to get those specialists in rural areas is very difficult. And it's not just the health issues that we deal with in that particular area. We, by choice, just give up a lot of the finer things that you might think about as far as the arts and so on and so forth. So, you know, if you want to go to Portland, it's an hour and a half drive from North Conway. Manchester's a couple hours. Boston's a couple hours. But those are the types of things that are sacrificed to be able to live in the White Mountains. And the people that live there enjoy that. We have great health care for normal types of health issues that people have.
Well, Tracy, again, thank you for the email. And you can email us as well. We'd love your thoughts and questions, whether you live in the region or not. 1-800-892-6477. Leslie's calling in from Intervale. Hi, Leslie. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, good morning.
Morning. Go ahead, Leslie.
So I grew up in Fryeburg, Maine. I was born at Memorial Hospital in North Conway. My grandfather was the coroner of Oxford County, which is the adjacent county in Maine to Carroll, and was on the staff there. And I lived in Jackson and worked with my husband at a restaurant there, which was there for 37 years. He had it since 1977 and ended it in 2013. And I worked with him for 26 years and,
wow,
and lived in Jackson.
So you are a White Mountains and region person.
I am. And I have lived in New York City, and I have lived in Charlottesville, Virginia, but I've spent the majority of my life in New England and love it and fully appreciate what people are saying about the fantastic quality of life and the beauty of living in an environment that everybody wants to visit, you know, with in a tourist-based economy, and also experiencing some of the sacrifices that you make when you might want to do something in a more urban environment and you have to drive there. But I will say, and we're experiencing it now enormously because there are several people in the valley, as there are in every community, that are in dire need for assistance, largely because of health concerns. We have a young girl in Bartlett, very young, under 10, who has leukemia. There's somebody else, another young kid who's fighting bone cancer. There's another guy who was hurt recently in a mountain biking accident and has a spinal cord injury.
Wow.
And I know in all the years that I have lived there, and we worked in a restaurant, and we gave gift certificates and fundraisers, and you will find this probably across the country, but you will not find a more generous community than the Mount Washington Valley of people that work two jobs and three jobs, who give gift certificates from their businesses, and who garnish money and make their living on tourism. They do. But boy, they stick together.
Okay. Well, Leslie, and this relates to something that Jack said earlier, is talking about all the nonprofit groups that kind of pull together and help people out. I think you mentioned that earlier, Jesse, too. Do you want to comment on Leslie's call that, yeah, it's tough, but people do pull it together?
Absolutely. I think the Mount Washington Valley is a very, very special place as far as the ability for a community to come together and rally and support each other. Anytime, like the caller said, there is a community member who's in need, there's an immediate cry to action and a line of people out the door to help. It's a really, really amazing thing.
Well, Leslie, thank you for the call. It's good to hear about your long experience in the region. A couple emails coming in from listeners. Tom in Rye says, do your guests have any opinion about the quality of jobs and wages provided in the Whites? How successful are the efforts to attract technology and manufacturing jobs to the area to balance out, Tom says, the overdependence on tourism in general? And he asks, what can be done to attract more diverse careers to the region? Tom, thank you so much. This is an important point. And first to you, I think, Mike, the quality of jobs and wages provided in the Whites. We hear a lot of complaints about this. You guys talked about
absolutely
having to work two, three jobs.
We are a service-oriented region. People are working for maybe not minimum wage. I don't think you can get away with paying minimum wage anymore. Just people can't live on that. But still, it's the $8 an hour job, $9 an hour job. That's why people, the young people, are working two, three, four jobs at a time. I mean, in my neck of the woods, Littleton, we're fortunate we have a nonprofit organization called Littleton Industrial Development Corporation, which over the last 30 years has developed a great industrial park. It's got 18 businesses, employ about 1,200 people.
So those are non-tourism businesses.
Exactly.
Those are regular
manufacturing jobs,
regular salaries,
things like that. They've done a great job of introducing, you know, some manufacturing jobs, which basically haven't existed since the – and again, my neck of the woods used to be well-known for shoe manufacturing. There were three or four plants in Littleton, Lisbon. Those all went by the wayside in the 60s and 70s.
Right.
So they stepped in, and they've LIDC and brought a lot of new jobs to the region.
What do you see, Jack, in terms of efforts to, as Tom puts it, to diversify the economic base?
I think I paid him to ask that question. Well, just to let everybody know, we do work on diversification. It's not just travel and tourism and retail. We have a number of tech companies that are growing in the Mount Washington Valley. There's Rapid Insight, there's Emerlin, there's Ambex, just to name a couple. The thing is, just like the desire for people to live in the Mount Washington Valley or the White Mountains, there's certain individuals in the tech world that want to get out of Boston, want to get out of New York, want a nice quality of life where they can do their development and so on and so forth at their own time and be able to go out and mountain bike, ski, canoe down the Saco, do any of those things. So there are people that are there, and I met a lot of them when I was working in the bank and doing mortgages because the people that wanted to move up here were in that niche. So we started the Tech Incubator, and at the time we started it in 2003, we had a number of tech companies that came in. Some of them have left. Some of them continue to grow. One of the star companies that we have is Rapid Insight. It's an analytical software company that has 14 employees, 15 employees at this point in time, that pay good wages. And then in manufacturing, there are a few manufacturing companies. Some of them left years ago.
Why
at this
did they
point
leave?
In time.
Just the whole manufacturing
shift, the cost of operations, the cost of transportation for their product, and all those things back in the day when they left. We have one of our star manufacturers is Lupine, which manufactures dog paraphernalia.
I didn't know that.
And you can get that anywhere in the country. They ship all over the world.
Well, what about infrastructure? Jesse, I wonder what you think. You know, tech companies especially, but any company really, wants high-speed internet access, wants, you know, perfect cell phone coverage, wants good transportation to other parts of the state or the region so they can meet with people. How would you say the infrastructure is set up to support these other types of businesses that we're talking about?
I think the Economic Council and the Chamber of Commerce and other organizations who are looking at these issues are addressing some of those concerns that you mentioned. The tech center has kind of the office space area that can really lend itself well to people who are telecommuting or businesses who want to come set up and be in kind of a maker space, which is really nice. And I think transportation as far as infrastructure is huge when you're getting your employees to your place of work. That's a huge concern that needs to be addressed for sure.
Well, and to Tom's point about wages, we pulled together some numbers on wages. And again, as you all said, the White Mountains region, mostly Carroll County, but a little bit of Coos and Grafton, depending on how you define it. The median household income in this region is significantly less than the statewide average. For example, the statewide average household income in New Hampshire is about $76,000. In Carroll County, it's 56. So that's a big difference. So yeah, go ahead, Jesse.
I think we've started to notice that, especially for young people in our area, there's this kind of big gap of people who are working in the Portsmouth, Portland, or Boston area for their younger years, right when they get out of college, kind of make some money, so they're wild oats, would you say, in the cities, not in the rural regions, and then moving back to our region or to our region for the first time when they're ready to settle down and start families. So we see this gap of people from, say, 20 to 35, and one of the ways that we have looked at kind of tangibly addressing this problem is the Young Professionals Group has started a student debt scholarship.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. So,
if you want to live here, we'll give you a little bit of a break on your student debt.
You are going to make some less money by living here, but one of the things we can take away is that burden of student debt. And the goal is each year to pay back a year's worth of someone's student loan debt. And in the past couple of years, this year was our third year, and we've donated over $23,000.
Wow, it's a lot.
So that's money that's going directly back into our economy instead of, say, to Sally Mae or something in Washington,
sure.
D.C.
Tom, I appreciate the question. Jack, I can see you maybe want to jump in real quick.
Yeah, I think the average income is inflated a little bit for Carol, mm-hmm. only because, as Jesse was talking about, we have a lot of early retirees, and they bring that average income up.
I see. So it's even lower,
yeah,
you're suggesting.
I would say, you know, the average person in retail or the restaurants are now making somewhere between $10 and $12. Some are paying $15. There's not a wage war yet, but there are, I know some, one of the restaurants I was talking to is now paying $12 an hour for dishwashers. Because they can't get them. So we have a huge issue not having a labor force, and then now we're having, because the labor force isn't there, it's causing restaurants and other places to pay a little bit more. So the average income over the year is probably closer to $30,000.
Okay, so that's significantly lower than the statewide average of about 76. Well, Tom, great email and important points to bring up. Richard emailed, by the way. He says, my bride, Julia, and I are spending our honeymoon hiking in the Whites in early August. What a way to celebrate. Richard says, by the way, she's 65, I'm 74. So that's awesome, Richard. Rick emailed and asked about workforce housing. So after a short break, we will definitely talk about that. So Rick, hang on with us because we will talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Exchange on NHPR.
This land is your land.
Summer is the time for adventure and exploring this land's endless ribbon of highway. And if you're the grand prize winner of NHPR Summer Car Raffle, we can help you do it in style. Don't miss your chance to drive off with $25,000 toward a new car of your choice. But don't wait. We're picking the lucky winner this Saturday at 2 p.m. Get your tickets right now, one for $50 or six for $150 at nhpr.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we continue our summer series, Going Local. Every Thursday, we're diving into a different region of the state, looking at the pluses and minuses of living there. Today, it's the White Mountains region. So let's hear from you if you live in the region or you know it well. What do you love about it? What don't you love? What do you think some of the biggest challenges of living in this region are? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And Jesse, Mike, and Jack, just before the break, I read an email from Rick who wanted to know about workforce housing. And Jack, since you're with the Mount Washington Valley Economic Council, I'll throw that one to you, please.
Okay, housing, workforce housing, we have a huge need. As I said to you before, earlier in the program, we talked about the Airbnbs having an impact on affordable rental properties long term. Housing is an expensive opportunity for built developers to build. The issues that we have can be ordinances within towns that cause an exorbitant amount of dollars to be spent because of the ordinances. We also have issues with the cost, the labor force that we don't have. There was a study done not too long ago, and there's like almost a 20% differential in employee cost for building than there is in the southern part of the state. We have a lack of competition in the trades, so the top dollars that they can get for the trades, which the job has to get done, they have to pay for it, is different. So developers in the area have been building more expensive housing.
Because they can get the payback.
Because they can get the payback. They can get their 28-30% mm-hmm. what they're looking for. And that's a 2,000, 2,500 square foot house versus a 1,200 square foot house. there was a developer over in Bridgeton who's put in small homes. They have a garage. They're about 1,000 square feet. And they're selling for $250,000, which is still above the affordable cost for people living in the Mount Washington Valley in the jobs that are available. So housing is a huge hold issue. We do have, Conway was able to, through Great Bridge, which is a developer, was able to put in a 32-unit mixed-use rental property. It's a great place, great amenities for young people. There's some subsidized rent in that facility. And then they also were able to put in a 30-unit senior housing, because that's another issue that we have to deal with in the Mount Washington Valley. We're the oldest, one of the oldest aging communities in the New Hampshire.
Yeah, in fact, on those numbers that I had earlier, these are averages from 2012 to 2016. But the average age in New Hampshire is 41. This is according to these numbers from 2016, so they might have changed a little bit. In Carroll County, the average age is 51.
Mm-hmm.
I was struck by that. And COAS, it's 48. So there you go. So agreeing with Rick about the workforce housing, but giving some examples of people working on it. Here's another email. This is Dale in Bartlett who says, can your guests comment on the threat, if any, to the water supply in the Mount Washington Valley? With the increase in tourists, the number of retirees moving to the area, and the Poland Springs across the border in Freiburg extracting thousands of gallons of water a day from the aquifer, Dale says, is there a concern? Dale, thank you so much. So I think I'm going to set aside the Poland Spring controversy for now, because we could talk about that for an hour, Dale, so I really appreciate it. But what about the broader point he raises, Mike, which is, you know, you and Jesse talked about that at the outset. The region, some people feel, is being loved to death. It's so beautiful. So many people want to come and visit that there are strains on natural resources.
There absolutely are. We're seeing that in Franconia Notch, again, where you have hundreds of hikers converge on the notch on the weekend. It's not just Franconia Notch. It's all the trails. And with that increased activity on the trails, you're going to run into problems with the trails themselves, drainage issues, overuse of the trails, damage to some of the fragile alpine plants, especially on places like Mount Washington, the Presidential Range, also Franconia Ridge. Do you have all those issues? I know you've talked about this ad nauseum on this program, Search and Rescue. More hikers that are out there, the more people, chances are someone's going to get hurt and need rescue.
So
that's always an issue.
Who is working on this issue of balance that you guys all talked about? You know, you don't want to tell people, don't come.
Yeah, well, you know, in Franconia Notch right now, you have a collaborative effort between State Park. Here you're dealing with State Park, you're dealing with the White Mountain National Forest.
Well, that's true, too.
You're working with the Department of Transportation with the highway issue. Appalachian Mountain Club, which has the hut, Greenleaf Hut, right above the notch. So they're all trying to work out a situation in that area. You also have your controversies over in Mount Washington with, you know, the threat of possibly a hotel being built 1,000 feet down below the summit of the mountain by the Cog Railway owners. That has sparked a tremendous amount of backlash from the environmental and conservation communities. And again, it's because we want to protect
the goose that lays the golden egg, to use a
phrase. It's a real balancing act.
Right.
I'm not sure what the answer is there.
Well, and there's a lot of people who need to weigh in on that because, as you point out, which is a great point, you've got local people, but then you also have a lot of this White Mountains region is federal land, so they get involved. And then there's the state park that goes right through the notch, so lots of decision makers who need to weigh in. I can see everybody wants to jump in, but I want to go to Jesse, too, because our emailer asks about water specifically and the impact of tourism on water. And given your role in the Upper Saco Valley Land Trust, you probably have some thoughts there, Jesse.
Yeah, absolutely. I think not only is there pressures from environmental pressures from hikers and natural resource tourists, but also from just the growing community. You know, we talk about housing. Where are we going to put our housing? There's a general development versus conservation and what goes where kind of puzzle that we need to figure out. And water, as we know, you know, open space, forests, and farms protect our region's water. They act kind of as a natural water treatment plant. So keeping our land cleared from, protected open spaces is really important when we talk about having clean water for all of us to drink.
That's really tricky then, because Jack talked about workforce housing, and that's really a need, but then you don't want to put it in a significant wetland because it affects water quality.
Absolutely. And that's exactly why nonprofits like the Upper Saco Valley Land Trust exist, because we're thinking about, we're looking at our communities as a whole, holistically. Where should development go? We're certainly not an anti-development organization. It's all about development where development should be and conservation where conservation should be. So when we look at our communities, we think in a really holistic way with our other partners about where that workforce housing should go. Where does it make sense? Where can people walk to work? We don't want to put workforce housing in the outliers of Lovell, Maine, where people are working in North Conway. We want to talk about where land conservation makes the most sense and where our really special, beautiful places are, and where what our community needs as a whole.
Did you want to jump back in there, Jack, for a minute?
Well, two things. The Mount Washington Valley is blessed to have a huge aquifer that we have, and the water is pretty spectacular in to drink, and so we're blessed there. But the other thing I wanted to talk about was that balance. The balance is also impacting the towns that have national parks or state parks located in them, and one that comes to mind that's been an issue in Conway has been Diana's Bath. Diana's Bath is a nice walk, small hike. It's in a nice area.
I just drove by it last week, by the way. I went to Echo Lake State Park up in Conway and drove by Diana's Bath. Didn't have time to go over there. But,
and the issue is parking.
Yeah.
And so the town has been trying to address the parking, and you get to a point where the residents are impacted who live along River Road, and the tourists that want to come, and the need, how do you balance that? How do you allow parking to take place and not tick off, so to speak, the tourists and say, give them tickets and everything else if they're parking illegally? And so how do you balance that?
Yeah, no, I hear you. And again, it's not just the town. The state has a say. Sometimes the feds have a say. I was just up in that area last week, and I saw signs all along that road that said, don't park here.
Exactly.
Now, this was on a Wednesday, so, you know, I had no problem. So I'm so sorry. We have to wrap it up because there's so much more that we could talk about. But I'm going to close out with you, I think, Mike. What's your favorite spot in the White Mountains, or at least the favorite spot that you're willing to share on the radio? You may have one you don't want to give
away.
I mean,
you think about all the great mountains and stuff like that. I always think about this on the way down here today. My favorite hike ever was a hike into a place called Shoal Pond, which is in the Pemigewasset Wilderness. It's a 6-mile walk in, fairly easy on mostly old log and railroad grades, but it was mid-September. The tourists were gone. The kids were back in school. I sat on the shoreline on a beautiful mid-September day, just sat on the shoreline for an hour and a half, all by myself, never saw a soul the entire day. So you don't have to me, I don't have to go up on top of a mountain to enjoy the woods. I just love being out in that environment by myself, and that's a big challenge now. As I think you had a story on NHPR last week about a hiker trying to find the quiet place. I found my quiet place that day, but it's getting harder and harder to do that.
All right. All of you, again, there's so much more we could have talked about, but we will have to wrap it up there. Thank you all so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Laura, for having us.
Oh, thank you.
Next Thursday, our Going Local series continues with the Upper Valley. So go to our website, send us your thoughts and your pictures about this region of the state. Check it out, nhpr.org/exchange. And we'll be doing our show on the Monadnock region in Keene on August 16th.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.